Ask the Senate Education Committee to come to order, please. Today is Thursday, February 14th, 2019. Happy Valentine's Day, or Happy Valentine's Day Massacre Day, however you prefer. Today is 9:01 a.m., and attends are Senator Birch, Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, Senator Costello will be here shortly, and myself, Senator Stevens. We have a quorum to conduct business. Today we'll be hearing a presentation on the new Alaska School Accountability and Rating System. Any questions or comments before we begin? We'll go ahead with our presentation then. Pleased to have you with us, Deborah Riedel, Division Operations Manager, Deed, and Brad Billings, Education Administrator, Deed. Thank you both for being with us. And if you'd begin by identifying yourself for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Deborah Riedel. I'm the Division Operations Manager for the Department of Education.
Thank you.
Brad Billings, I'm the Administrator for the State System of Support, Department of Education.
Thanks so much. Appreciate you being with us. This is a complex subject. I've tried to read through it. It's dense. A lot of terminology, but I appreciate your being here to explain it all to us.
Okay, so we're going to start off with just a little statement about kind of what an accountability system is. So every element of our education system, including our expectations for students, how we understand if students are meeting those expectations, and how we are working with and supporting teachers and leaders, work towards the goal of ensuring all students are prepared for success after high school. Accountability is just one piece of this system. So the Every Student Succeeds Act was put into legislation in December of 2015. In May of 2018, the Alaska Department of Education submitted the state plan to the Department of Education, and it was approved. We had several iterations, but we finally got a plan approved in May. In June, the accountability regulations were put into effect, and then in this last October, on the 23rd, we released our first set of school designations. So in order to do this, we engaged in quite a bit of stakeholder input. We went to conferences, we conducted surveys, we utilized our committee of practitioners with the Title I programs. All in all, we had about 4,000 stakeholder comments, and those came from a variety of different avenues, educators, community members, parents, students. And in addition to all of the work that we did up front to get all of the pieces the way we wanted them, each iteration of the plan was put out for public comment. So that went out three times, and so we had public comment on each of those sections for each of those times we put the plan out for public comment. And so with all that comment, we fine-tuned it. We looked at, you know, each of the groups, like each of the title programs had specific information that where we looked at. For instance, Title III talks about English learners. We reached out to practitioners who do English learner language and had them provide input about what our plan said to support the accountability system.
Thank you. Sophie, just for a minute, Senator Costello is with us from right from the very beginning. Senator Hughes, is that too bright on you, the sunshine there? Okay, well, if anybody finds it, let me know, and we'll lower the shades.
It's delightful.
It is, and indeed. Thank you. Please continue.
So if you were interested in looking at our Alaska State Plan, it's posted on our website. And so if you go to education.alaska.gov, you'll find it on the very first page. The State Plan is the blue box on the left, and our System for School Success on the right, that is where you're going to find the information that we're talking about today, the school designations and information about the accountability system. So the accountability system is a group of indicators where we look at different data and look to see how students are doing and within the system of the education. So for grades K through 6, we have academic achievement for English, language, arts, and math. We also look at academic growth, and that indicator talks about how students progress from year to year, and that was important. That was a big stakeholder input. They really felt that academic growth was a big piece of this. English Learn Progress, and this is based on Access 2.0 for ELs, which is the assessment that we provide to English learners each year. That's an assessment that we require all English learners who are identified to take, and to see if they're making progress in English language acquisition. We also have chronic absenteeism, which looks at the amount of days the students are in school, not days the students are out of school. So that indicator talks about, it's a more of a positive, looking at how many days students are in school. And then grade 3 English language proficiency. And so this is where we look at assessment results for third graders to see if they're on track, and they get additional points in the accountability system for that. When we look at the indicators for grade...
Thank you. Just as a data point, and before you left the slide, I was when you say academic achievement, obviously that includes some sort of exam or measurement tool or something. And I'm just curious, you know, with three grandkids in the Anchorage School District, what does that actually mean? Is that like a one measurement test a year, or one for each of these subjects more than once a year? And I just don't have a sense for how frequently you are measuring that achievement.
Okay, through the chair, Senator Birch. It is based on the PEAKS, our summative assessment that's done once a year in the spring.
So it's basically, this is all based on one?
One summative assessment. In ESSA, it requires that we provide one summative assessment, and that this accountability system is based on that assessment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yes. Further questions while we're here? Yes, please, Senator Hughes.
Thank you. Once you gather this data, are you tying any of these things to draw conclusions? Are you just simply trying to say, yes, Mr. and Mrs. Principal, your school's doing well? Or are you trying to take this information? For instance, if there's chronic absenteeism, are you able to tie that in to a school who may be having difficulties, and then they are coached or they work on trying to improve the absenteeism to improve their performance?
So through the chair, Senator Hughes, what we're providing with the designation report that we give the districts that take all those indicators and give them an index score, we provide that to the districts to make some decisions. Brad's going to talk about some of the pieces that the department is going to do in order to help as we move along, helping those students helping those schools that need additional support.
Okay.
But we provide the information, and the districts will look at their systems and kind of see where they are.
Okay. Follow up.
Yes, please, Senator Hughes.
In informal conversations with teachers, some have mentioned to me that they are concerned that some of the children are really suffering because the absenteeism is so chronic, and also that if we look at the number of hours our students are in school in a calendar year or in a school year compared to other states, we have fewer hours, we have shorter days. And then along with that read by nine effort, which is so crucial, that the absenteeism, the fewer hours that our students are in school compared to the rest of the country, and the fact that we promote students sometimes who haven't achieved what they were supposed to achieve in those grades, if we tackled those things along with the emphasis on reading, that we would do wonders for our children. So I just want to make that comment, because I can see that probably this is going to pick up on some of that, and just in how the schools are using it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Begich.
Just a quick question. Where in the budget does the work that you're doing fall? Which section of the budget?
Through the chair.
Admin services, whatever.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Begich. This is in... I'll have to get back with you on that. I don't deal with the budget part. And that they'll be addressing that with OMB later.
Can I follow?
Please, Senator.
I'm confused. I'm just asking the question, where are you in the budget? Let me ask that question, since you're doing the work.
Student learning.
You're in student learning. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, please, go right ahead.
Okay. Thanks, Brad. So chronic absenteeism also applies to the high school students, or the middle school and high school, grade 7, 12. And once again, this is the number of days students are in school. The graduation rate falls into the high school for the four-year cohort. Those are the students who finish in from their ninth grade year, and then the five-year cohort for the those who finish in 5 years, and that plays a consideration. So the system, the indicators are weighted within the system, and you can see we have grades 6 through 8 on the left, and notice that growth. You know, we honored the input from our stakeholders. The growth indicator is 40% of the accountability system. Academic achievement was 30, EL progress 15, chronic absenteeism 10, and grade 3 ELA is 5%. A little bit different for grades 7 through 12. Growth, once again, is 40%. Achievement is 20%, with graduation rate is 20% as well. Chronic absenteeism is 10, and the English learner progress is 10 as well. So the overall index value for most schools, it just goes through the indicators and creates value based on those percentages. In order to get an index score, the school needs to have enough students for two indicators. We have several small schools, and so that sometimes for reporting purposes and the minimum end, they need to have 10 students. Sometimes they wouldn't receive an indicator based on the number of students that they have. And so those were, they need to have two students in the academic achievement for ELA and math, the growth piece for both ELA and math, the graduation rate, and the English learner progress. Here's a graph that shows kind of how the schools fell. We had 468 schools that received an index score. Our highest score was 98.99 out of 100, and our minimum score is 1.19. And the average index score was 46.2. And so on this graph, each bar represents one school.
Just for help us understand this, who received 98.9? That's remarkable.
Thank you.
through the chair. That was a high school that was 11th and 12th. It was one of our technical high schools. They didn't have any students that were assessed, because we do our assessment in ninth grade. So they were rated on chronic absenteeism and graduation rate, because it was a specialized high school.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So districts and schools received reports that talked about their indicators and their overall index score. So on the left, this is what the report looked like. You should have received one in your packet yesterday. And also with that report, we provided a companion document to help kind of interpret some of the fields that were on that designation report. And the designation report reflects the percentages that we just saw on the pie graph earlier, and the scores that they received and how it was calculated to receive an index score.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Hughes.
Could we go back one slide? Because there was a school that received only an index score of 1.19. Can you tell us what happens when a school receives a score like that? What are the steps that are taken?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, the Brad Billings will talk about that when we get into the student support piece.
Thank you.
And while we're here, I think I understand why we had 98.9. I understand that, but it would be nice for us to know what are the top 10 schools. I mean, it would be nice to know what they're doing that others aren't doing. So it'd be nice to have a breakout at some point so we could learn that. And Senator Hughes makes a good point, too, about nice to know why schools are failing entirely. Thank you.
You will,
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's actually a good question. So why is that level of analysis going to be done? Are you going to look at the top 10 schools and the top, maybe the lowest performing schools, the highest performing schools, and make some determinations and recommendations? Do you have the capacity to do that?
So through the chair, Senator Begich, Brad Billings is going to talk about the supports that and the designations. We have several designations that schools receive, and he'll talk about the supports that we're providing for that.
Thank you. We're all curious and appreciate the comments. Thanks. Please go ahead.
So for the record, Brad Billings, and continuing with then the designations and what we're doing, acting on the data that we have here. So from that index value, from the graduation rate, from the attendance scores, we go through and we designate schools. We have three designations that we assign. The first designation there is a comprehensive support and improvement schools. And there are three ways that a school can be designated as CSI, Comprehensive Support and Improvement. The first are these lowest performing schools that Senator Begich referred to. The lowest 5% of Title I schools are designated as CSI 5% schools. And then we go and work with them, and we'll talk about that in a moment, what we do with them. We have 16 schools in the state of Alaska that are designated as CSI 5% schools. The second way to be designated as a CSI school is through the graduation rate, and that's a graduation rate of less than two-thirds. So any school that's graduating less than or equal to 66 2/3% of their eligible seniors is automatically designated as a CSI grad rate school. We have 67 schools designated with CSI grad rate designation. This is a new designation in past accountability systems. We haven't focused explicitly on the graduation rate, so that's a new category for us. The third way to be designated as a comprehensive support and improvement school is if you are designated as a TSI school, and so we'll get to that second category here in a moment. That doesn't kick in until after 3 years, and so we'll face this CSI designation starting in 2021 because we're just starting our accountability system. So now to get to the second way that schools are designated for targeted support and improvement, what the SLA requires is that we are treating not only the whole school as a unit, but within every school, we look at defined subgroups, and we treat each of those subgroups as a school in and of themselves. So if I go and advance one slide then, here are the nine subgroups that we look at within every school in Alaska. African American, Alaska Native, American Indian students, Asian Pacific Islander, Caucasian, Hispanic, those that declare two or more races. We have students with disabilities. Yes.
Just very quick.
Senator Begich, please.
Brad, are you talking about when you say two more races, two more of the races named, not
yes.
two more of any other races?
It's
two
yes, more Senator Begich, through the chair,
to
that's
clarify
correct.
That.
Thank you.
And then we have students with disabilities, English learners, and those that are economically disadvantaged. So those subgroups are each analyzed or assigned an index value as a subgroup themselves. So for each school, we have an index of value assigned to the school as a whole, and then nine subgroups. One of the challenges here is that obviously these subgroups are sometimes low student count groups, and so it may be that there are not enough students to assign a value, and so on your sheet you might see an NA, and that would be the situation
Thank
there.
Thank you, Brad. Senator Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, before you left this slide, I just was curious about when you have graduation rate less than or equal to two-thirds, is that and you know you start with the freshman class might be Service High School, might have 500 kids, I don't know, whatever it is, 500, and then you get to sophomore and maybe it's 450, and then you get to junior. I mean, it kind of gets smaller or can get smaller. Where do you begin that metric on graduation rate? I don't know. Are you looking at the freshman class? Or are you looking are you just looking at who starts the senior high? Because I just noticed that from my own experience in looking at graduation rates, that sometimes those students kind of fall off the radar before they're a senior in high school. And I was curious as to how you build that or how you calculate that graduation rate through the chair.
So, yes, Senator Birch, through the chair. So we have a graduation cohorts that are determined for each school. This happens when students enter the ninth grade. So any student entering the ninth grade is placed in a school's cohort. And then throughout the subsequent 4 years, if they should exit the cohort and move to another school in Alaska or land at another school that has a diploma mm-hmm. track in it, mm-hmm. then they're moved out of that cohort. And similarly, students could move into the cohort, and that's something that we track at the Department of
okay.
Education.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thanks, Rob.
So to proceed then, targeted support and improvement schools, we're looking at the performance of those subgroups, and we're identifying equity gaps, low-performing subgroups. And schools that have low-performing subgroups then are designated for TSI support and improvement. And so Alaska, we have 24 schools. Just a note on those 24, they can be designated for more than one subgroup. So we may have a school that's designated for the performance of, you know, students that are economically disadvantaged and also Caucasians, for example. That would be the designation for that. So that's the second designation type. And then the third designation type that we have is universal support, and that's a designation assigned to all schools that are not CSI or TSI.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was a map that was produced, I think I saw it in the Anchorage Daily News about 2 weeks ago, that used these designations. So it's fair to say that the 67 and 16 schools that are in the first category are all over the state, many of them in rural Alaska. Would that be correct?
Senator Begich, through the chair, yes. Our CSI 5% are focused in rural Alaska. Honestly, with the category of graduation rate, that's much more diverse in both geography and also in school type. We have K-12 schools, we have correspondence schools newly on our radar, we have alternative schools, correctional facilities, all designated just for that two-thirds graduation rate.
So, Mr. Chairman, to clarify, so you're both urban and rural in the second of those two categories, 16 schools, virtually all rural, 67 schools, just all across the board?
Yes, through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
So we talked about subgroups then. So here I think is getting toward Senator Hughes' question about what are we doing with this data? How are we working with schools? So each of these designated schools, they're required to perform these four steps. First of all, they go through a local needs assessment. And this is expected to be with stakeholders, district, local, staff in the school, community members. So it involves the consultation of stakeholders. And then from that work, they then develop an implementation plan or a plan to attack or have an impact on the reason that they were designated. And so they develop that plan that includes then evidence-based interventions. And by that, we're meaning interventions that have an impact. So you identified three interventions that a school might focus on that would impact the reasons that they were designated for.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple questions about this area in particular, given as you fondly refer to it as the Valentine's Day Massacre. I'm concerned about student support, of course. I'm concerned about whether we can do what we say we'll do as the Department of Education for the districts where we are providing this level of guidance. And when you talk about the implementations of evidence-based interventions, my two questions related to that are, first, who's paying for the interventions? You know, is that school districts are expected to pay for those interventions given a proposed 24 to 25% cut in the BSA? I think that might be of concern. And then second, if it's the department, how to know about that? And then the other question I have is, will you be able to, given that some of these lowest performing districts are in rural areas, there's been travel costs that have been cut. When I look at the state system of support, it's been significantly reduced by 19% under this budget proposal. Will you be able to actually implement these interventions, and if so, how?
Senator Begich, through the chair. So let me speak to what the department does then. To address your first question, we have a school improvement team that distributes federal resources. So if I just advance one slide, we have school improvement grants. This is money that's taken from Title I specifically for school improvement purposes. So those evidence-based interventions that we're working with schools to implement, they have some federal funds to do that with. Of course, we're not displacing what they're already doing with what they're receiving through other means. In the department, it's not just the school improvement team. We have a federal programs team that supports the title programs that Deb mentioned. So the Title I, the English learners, the migrant students, there's also a federal allocation that comes that's distributed to districts to do that work as well. In regards to specifically how we're supporting the districts, we also have school improvement coaches that are out and working with specific schools. We've assigned them at this point to our CSI 5%, that lowest 5%. So that's a limited number of coaches that we're assigned to work with that group. We're considering how to better distribute that resource.
Just a brief follow-up.
Please, Senator.
So they're then funded by federal funds too, or are they funded by state GF funds?
The school improvement coaches are state funded.
Right. And yes. And so I understand what you're doing now, mm-hmm. and I appreciate what you're doing now. And for years, we've heard that the department is on the edge of being able to provide support. So my question was, will you be able to do this under the budget that's been proposed? Will you still be able to do these functions? And that's what I want to know.
I'm not sure I'm in a position to answer that question. I would say that we are considering that and figuring out how to distribute our resources in a way that supports as many schools as possible.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted the committee to know that as we get this presentation, while it is relevant to today's world, it may not be relevant in that regard to tomorrow's world. And I want us to be clear about that.
Very good point. Thank you, Senator Begich. Brad, please continue.
Thank you. So then other supports that are available for designated schools. We have a school improvement process and tool that we provide. It's based on the Alaska Effective Schools Framework. This is a list of six domains: curriculum, instruction, leadership development, and indicators of basically effective practices that are going on in schools. We also have some partnerships with non-government organizations. The Alaska Statewide Mentor Project, they provide mentoring to new teachers within our designated schools. We have the Alaska Staff Development Network partnering with the Anchorage School District to provide an annual RTI, an instructional conference that a lot of rural districts participate in as well. We also have the Alaska School Leadership Institute as a training event that happens at the end of the year, trying to catch rural staff, staff from rural schools, you know, as they're moving through Anchorage to provide some technical assistance and planning. We have the school improvement coaching and capacity building that I mentioned just a moment ago. We have the school improvement grants, which are federal monies that then we pass through and grant to districts to work on the reasons for designation. So that's another resource available. And then we have outreach webinars, and then obviously one-on-one assistance. Obviously, as we've rolled out this new accountability system, as folks at the local and district level wrestle with understanding what it's saying and how to respond to the indicators, we've taken a lot of one-on-one calls and walked through specific data for specific schools or subgroups.
Senator Begich, and then Senator Costello.
Just a very quick question, Brad. The statewide mentor, it's about the two of the three here. I know the Association of Alaska School Boards work and what they do, but the statewide mentor project, that's located where?
So that's through the chair. That's located at the University of Alaska,
and the Alaska
Fairbanks.
And Alaska Staff Development Network?
The Alaska Staff Development is a subgroup of the Alaska Council on School Administrators.
Okay, so the first one's the University of Alaska.
Alaska Fairbanks, yes.
And so, again, I just want to call attention to that because the university is facing a 44% cut.
Senator Stevens?
Yeah, thank you. Senator Costello and then Senator Hughes.
Thank you, and through the chair, with all due respect to my colleague, I just wanted to mention to those listening that the budget that was introduced yesterday is the beginning of a process, and it doesn't indicate the process that we'll have to hear what the impact will be, so it's not – I don't expect it to be the final, because I support education and am concerned about the cuts that were proposed. So just want to mention that. But I'm sure you hate anecdotal stories, because that doesn't fit into the data analysis that you're putting together, and I really appreciate this. But I just did want to share for the committee members too that I've served for about 8 full years, and every fall I visit my schools. I still have a few to visit this fall, and I meet also with Dr. Dina Bishop and have really great conversations during that process. And I just have to share that one of the middle schools in my district, I was talking to the principal, who has now moved on to be a principal of a high school, and he said that he has a teacher who has a first hour class with no students. And what he would do is, if a student didn't show up for school, the principal and that teacher would drive to the student's house and meet with them and bring them to school. I mean, this is obviously not something every school has the capacity to do, but you can see just the importance and priority of the kids who are starting to be absent from school, and how they grab them as soon as they can and let them know that they matter, that the principal and the teachers care. And then you flip over to another situation that I've seen where a student has chronic absenteeism, and they just, the parents get a letter, and the letter just indicates that their child is not attending school or what have you. Based on the conversations that we've had in this committee about career and technical education and the options for students, you know, I've worked at Nine Star with kids who have dropped out and want to earn those credits. I mean, I know there are options for students. Can we put in that letter, or can we find a way to communicate with parents and the students that there are some really exciting options out there? I mean, a lot of the kids that I've seen who drop out are actually very, very intelligent. They're dealing with issues in their lives that perhaps prevent them from getting to school, but if given the opportunity, they can thrive. And it just pains me, actually, that our goal for the dropout isn't 100% graduation. I don't know why we don't make that the actual goal. And really, you know, I'd be curious to know specifics about, you know, do we know what happens when a student stops going to school? There's another situation in the Fairbanks area where I know a student was on the honor roll, doing really well in school, and then all of a sudden just stopped going to school. And in talking to that family, there wasn't anyone who reached out to find out if there was, I mean, the family was under the assumption that something traumatic had happened to that child. And nobody asked, and nobody looked into it. And I know there's a lot of effort to reach these kids, and I don't mean to undermine the efforts that are going on, because I know we all care, but is there a process where we know we're actually doing right by these families who are having students stop going to school? You know, the parents are struggling to get their child to school, but they can't force that, oftentimes a high school student. But we have all these career and technical opportunities, and we've seen the graduation rates for the CTE. They're just so high, and so we know what works. Can we look at what works and maybe look at, you know, what schools are offering CTE? Maybe their graduation rates are higher, and try to help with the other schools that may not have that opportunity? And I know there's a question in there somewhere, but thank you.
So Senator Costello, through the chair, let me just say I love anecdotes, because I've been years from the classroom, and so it takes me back to the students and what really matters. So the local needs assessment that designated schools are going through, it allows the local staff to tackle those issues. And so over the course of the last 2 or 3 months, designated schools specifically in that CSI grad rate category have been wrestling with exactly the same questions that you're raising. What are our needs, and what is the intervention that's going to impact that? Whether it's having a community liaison that reaches out to students and contacts families in the morning when a student isn't there, or whether it's saying we've got to engage our kids better and the focus on the CTE or the career-directed program. So we've funded that kind of planning specifically for designated schools, so that the local folks, who I think understand that better than anyone, can wrestle with that and come up with those solutions. I know Deb wanted to talk to that as well.
So through the chair, this is the Alaska Education Challenge focuses on CTE as a method for helping with that graduation rate. And we do have statistics through our Carl Perkins grants that talk about the graduation rates for students who take about 2 years of CTE courses is significantly higher. Well, not significantly, but we have about 17% to 18% higher graduation rate for those students. And so that's a focus on that you'll see more coming forward. We do collect data as far as where they end up after high school. We have to report that to the federal government. So that's in the works.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Senator Costello. This is the place for anecdotal information.
Oh,
you know, it truly is. You know, we appreciate the high-level approach that you're presenting to us, but we also appreciate hearing from kids and parents and teachers. And Senator Hughes.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just, before I go to my question, just follow up with, I know we have a lot of wonderful and smart people working in our districts as administrators, school board members, and I'm guessing that as they realize how valuable CTE is as far as raising graduation rates, I wouldn't be surprised if some districts will or have adopted policies that if there's a student that is beginning to be at risk and being absent a lot, that they wouldn't reach out and try to offer and pull them into a CTE. Maybe if they're in a high school that doesn't have CTE, try to get them into a high school that does, that kind of thing. I'm hoping that's happening. But my question is having to do with the coaching. So if a school has scores low and they qualify as the CSI designation, and then they are assigned a coach, can you give us some anecdotal stories of schools that have been coached and what's happened and have they been able to raise their scores? Are there any schools that you can highlight that have turned around because of what this assessment discovers and the help they receive?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, yeah, one school comes to mind. This was a school that when the coach arrived 3 years ago, the coach observed some aggressive student interactions, and it was about 2 years into that coach's work when she stopped and she realized that she wasn't seeing this aggressive posturing among students anymore, and so that the school, with the coach's help, and I would note with a strong leader, there was a strong school principal in that situation, they were able to work on behavior interventions, work on expectations for students, processes such that the climate of the school improved dramatically. That was an improvement that we saw. So that's one anecdote that gets at that issue.
And follow up? Very good. Thank you. And so then when they were assessed after that three-year period, then they were doing better as far as academic achievement, growth, et cetera, indicators?
So, Senator Hughes, we're not seeing that link as direct. There are I guess in a case-by-case basis, we're seeing schools that have improved on the assessment data through that statewide assessment. In other cases, we're not seeing the bump in the assessment data that we would expect. We're seeing these middle indicators on school climate, on attendance or those kind of issues. So we're not always seeing that go through to the assessment data performance that we would expect.
Is it because it hasn't been in place long enough, or you're still refining how to help the schools? Because if we're going to the trouble to doing the assessments, we have these different methods to help them, and we're not improving them, then, you know, that's a problem. So is it that it hasn't been long enough, or can you just help us understand where we're going with this?
Sure, Senator Houston, the chair. It's a complex system, the way that adult behaviors flow through to student performance. That's what I'd say first. But then I think the larger challenge that we see is an issue with staff turnover in these situations. A coach works hard, a principal works hard to build capacity, say, for example, in early reading skills, to see a bump in that third grade reading level. And then staff are turning over such that capacity isn't staying in that low performing school. That's something that we at the coaching program struggle with. That's why those non-government partners are so important, because we've just accepted the fact that we need to provide annual training because of the staff turnover in some of our lowest performing schools. And so, for example, that RTI conference, the instructional conference that's annual, the Alaska School Leadership Institute, that's something we offer annually to try and shore up this movement of capacity to other schools in the state. That would be one issue that would be a concern.
Follow up.
Yes, please, Senator.
I just hope that it concerns me, because I thought you were going to tell me that when you find a low-performing school, that you come in and you provide these supports, and that you're seeing a few years later that they're coming out of that. And I'm not hearing that. And I think we all want that to happen. So I hope the department will continue to brainstorm. I'm sure the Alaska Education Challenge is part of that, but I look forward to the day that we hear that there's a low assessment and there's intervention and the school is raised up. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. The issue of coaching program, or are you going to be delivering, will we get more information from you later on about that issue, like who they are, how they're funded, where they come from, or maybe now?
Yes, Chair Stevens, we'd be happy to do that at your request.
Good. Okay. Thank you. Please continue, Brett.
So we've talked then about this accountability system newly introduced this year, the first year for school designations. We're looking at a new set of schools that we maybe haven't looked at in the past, the diversity that Senator Begich brought up. So we're working with smaller schools. The U.S. Department of Ed was fairly insistent that all schools be considered for designation. And so that's put some smaller schools on our radar. It's put correspondent schools, some alternative schools on our radar that maybe weren't there in the past. The timing of designations, due to how we collect data, we're designating schools. This year we did it in October. And obviously schools are well into session. They're through their first semester. And so we want to be very intentional in how we interact with the school, the district, the staff, because they have initiatives that they've put in place to address their challenges. And we're not, this accountability system is not there to displace those. It's to add some value or to focus them in some specific areas. This idea of establishing the evidence-based practices, and what we're doing is we're focusing more on outcomes to say, are we moving the needle, as Senator Hughes has brought up, that when a school or a district chooses to spend these school improvement funds on an intervention, then how are we determining if it's having an impact? How are they accountable to that? So that's a consideration moving forward. And then we listed those six indicators that leads to a school being designated. We do have the option as a state to consider additional student success and school quality indicators. When we chose ELA reading at the third grade as one of our indicators, when we're looking at chronic absenteeism, one of our considerations is what data are we already gathering such that we're not imposing an additional data gathering burden on districts. And so it may be in the future, as we flesh that out, there may be some other indicators that we would integrate into our system that would measure something that we feel is important. And so just to wrap up then, the considerations that we're looking at, our accountability system focuses on those six indicators that we noted. It focuses obviously on graduation rate, that two-thirds threshold, and then it focuses on equity, saying even within a school, no matter how well the school performs, there may be subgroups of students that are struggling, and we want to shine a light on that and address that issue. So the indicators, the graduation rate, and then equity among subgroups. And then just to redirect us back to this accountability system, the ESSA plan, the Alaska's Every Student Succeeds Act plan, it is not what's driving the department. We're guided by the vision and the mission of the State Board of Education. We're driven by the Education Challenge initiative that's in place, and then we're also obviously focusing on the efforts and the work of the district, school, classroom, and community stakeholders.
Well, thank you. I appreciate our presentation. Is pretty
yes.
Good. Well, thank you so much. Could you give us an idea? I appreciate that you're saying that you're driven really by the State School Board and Commissioner and all that. But can you give us an idea of the change, without going into too much detail, but are we better off with ESSA than we were with No Child Left Behind? Because I remember when I first got in the legislature, that was the big focus, No Child Left Behind. It didn't seem to be working quite as well as folks had hoped. Are you happier with ESSA in general? Are you pleased with where it's sort of directing us as compared to NCSL? I mean, as NCLB?
Sure, Senator Stevens. So the accountability system as it exists now, it still has some components of what we were using before, but it has allowed us flexibility, first of all, in the indicators that we're including. So that focus on chronic absenteeism, the focus on reading by the third grade, reading skills, reading proficiency at the third grade. And so that allows flexibility. Also, how we're supporting designated schools is something that we have considerable flexibility that we didn't necessarily have under No Child Left Behind. And so that flexibility is going to play out in the types of schools that are designated, how we support a correspondence school versus an alternative school versus a K-12 brick-and-mortar school. So yes, there's flexibility there that we didn't have before, and I would defer to Deb because I think she would have something to say about this.
So for the record, this is Deb Riddle. Through the chair, with No Child Left Behind, it was 100% of kids had to be proficient by a certain date. What we're allowed to do right now is set some goals that are more attainable. We would love to have 100%, but we need to be realistic and set goals that schools and districts can reach. And that's what ESSA provides. And ESSA is more than just the accountability system. If you read through the plan, it has the accountability system at the beginning, and it talks about the indicators and what the goals are for the state. But it also talks about what each of the title programs are going to do to support that those designations. So, you know, what is Title I for those economically disadvantaged? What's the focus on Title I? What's the focus on Title III in order to meet those long-term goals that are set in the accountability system?
Thank you. Can you give us just a rough idea of federal funding? How much are we talking? I mean, a percentage, is it like, just can you give us a thought on federal funding compared to state funding?
Through the chair, for Title I, we get about $42 million. That's what we get for Title I. I know that our migrant program is at about $16 million, right around in there. And then I'm not sure about the other titles, but there is that money that is supporting and not supplanting the state funds. So it's whatever it needs to be on top of what the state funds are providing.
Thank you. So we'll go to Senator Begich and then Senator Birch.
A couple questions. Is the title, is the federal funding that we get driven then by the contribution that the state makes?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, it's based on census data and low income.
Perfect. The second question I have, and sort of a clarification too, is I really want to see what Senator Hughes is talking about, that we use the data that we're collecting to actually improve outcomes, and so I'm hoping that that will be a focus of what we do. And the reason I'm bringing up budget issues is because I want us to be sure to prioritize and understand the interconnectivity between you and the university and the school districts locally. So when we're actually building the budget here around education, we do so in a way that serves our schools and the mission of the department. So that's why I'm asking these questions, and that's what I intend for my colleagues as well. All of us want to ensure that education, all of us up here want to ensure that education works for the kids and the parents and the teachers in Alaska. I really want to emphasize that you mentioned teacher retention as an issue that both Senator Hughes and I have taken have looked at as a incredibly important issue, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, Senator Hughes. I want to be clear that teacher retention and that turnover rate seems to be a factor every time we hear one of these presentations, and I'm not sure how we can connect that more to the work that you're doing, but I'd be interested in knowing if you have any ideas about that. I'm not asking for them right now, but that to me seems to be the nut we have to crack to figure out how we build those relationships and then incorporate all those mentoring skills and not lose them because we then lose the teachers we mentored.
Thank you. Senator Birch, then Senator Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. great presentation. Thank you very much. This is helpful. And on the heels of a presentation we had recently from the Juneau School District, where the superintendent represented that I think their four-year graduation rate was in the low to mid 80s for four-year, and then it bumped up a couple of percent for five-year graduation. But it remarkably, it jumped into the low 90s, as I recall, with a continuing education, a technical education component. And with that kind of, and you reinforce that here, why don't we, require, mandatory welding class in, before you graduate from high school? It seems like the technical education component seems to be a very vital contributor to a successful graduation rate. And I was just wondering, I'm old enough to remember mandatory shop class in probably junior high school or something. But do we have, is there any sort of a structure or a review or consideration of technical education as a required component of graduation? Because it certainly seems to be affecting favorably the graduation rates through the chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Through the chair, Senator Birch, we do have some districts who require some technical education as a local graduation rate, as a requirement. We have, for Carl D. Perkins, which is the CTE funding, federal funding source, we have 43 districts that receive those funds for CTE courses. The other 13 that don't take the money, they're very small, and the requirements for Carl Perkins are for $15,000. They don't feel is worth the amount of money. But the most districts offer CTE courses. One of the projects that we're working on through the Alaska Education Challenge is to create some state-approved courses and pathways that could articulate up into post-secondary for those districts that maybe don't have the capacity. One of them is like Microsoft, getting it, so Microsoft certifications, so that when they graduate, they have some certifications. That's part of the Education Challenge. One of the goals is to create some opportunities for districts and students to graduate with either dual enrollment or some industry certifications. And that would kind of give but that's a focus that we've been working on.
So. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, thank you very much, Senator Costello.
Thank you, and I'm glad that you mentioned the census is going to affect the federal funding. I've actually talked to Donna Ardoin about the original $250,000 that was in the budget for outreach to let Alaskans know that the census is happening and they should respond, and that there's significant opportunity to grab those federal funds. But if Alaskans aren't counted, then we actually could lose some. We're at risk of losing some federal funds. And she had indicated to me that amount was removed from the budget and that it would be absorbed by the governor's office. So I would just ask that your department, through your commissioner, have a conversation with the governor's office to make sure that those efforts actually are being made, because I think that this is low-hanging fruit, to be at risk of losing federal funds because we haven't put an effort out to educate people that what the census means and how important it is to Alaska. It's just something that I'm concerned about, because it affects, I think, transportation, education, quite a few areas of our state. So just want to put that plug in for you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further questions? Well, this has been really interesting. I thought we might have some folks online who want to be heard, but we don't at this time. If there's nothing further, then, and if you have no further presentation for us, we certainly appreciate it. It's been a great learning experience, and we are adjourned.